This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, August 20th, 2021, and today will be better than yesterday. Christina Buswell is pinch hitting for Taylor Schwenk, who is off somewhere trying to meet his four-day bachelor party over-under of 37 and a half drinks. Christina, do you think he'll get there with that over-under? But I would warn you, answer carefully, because I got some inside information this morning.
Without knowing the insider information, I think it is fair to say he will meet that 37. Did you say 37 and a half? I think
37 and a half over four
days.
Yeah,
I think he'll very easily meet that.
Yeah. So I got a text this morning from Taylor, and this is it word for word. I'm absolutely 100% serious. He texted me this morning and must have drank 100 beers last night, laying here feeling like I got hit by a truck. LOL. Back to sleep. Have a good day. I don't even know if he's going to remember writing that text.
Probably not. Good luck, Taylor, suffering the consequences of drinking about 100 beers. I definitely think he has exceeded that 37 and a half.
By the way, I'm Buster Olney. I'm up on the shores of Lake George in the Adirondacks. As we start today's podcast, some news and notes. A temporary restraining order against Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer has been dissolved after Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Diana Gould-Saltman ruled against a woman's request for a permanent restraining order against Bauer on Thursday. Alden Gonzalez, who was on the podcast yesterday talking about the case, was on SportsCenter last night, and he gave this update.
The judge basically ruled that Trevor Bauer did not pose enough of a threat for this woman to require a protective order, citing evidence that Bauer never threatened her to begin with, and that Bauer, the physical acts that Bauer did to her in what was described as rough sex, were not something that she didn't already consent to. Now, the judge, in explaining her ruling, did allow that the pictures that she submitted were not very flattering at all, but she added this quote, which I thought was very instructive to this. She said, quote, "If she set limits and he exceeded them, this case would have been clear. But she set limits without considering all the consequences, and the respondent did not exceed limits that the petitioner set."
He talked about how Trevor Bauer will remain on suspended leave from Major League Baseball.
That leave has been extended five times. It expires on Friday. The expectation is that that administrative leave is going to be extended once again, assuming that the MLB Players Association gives its consent to do that. In all likelihood, Major League Baseball is going to wait on a potential punishment. I don't think they're going to issue any sort of suspension, if there is one, until that criminal investigation by Pasadena wraps up.
Yeah, Bauer still faces the possibility of criminal charges, and Major League Baseball is investigating him as well. His administrative leave, through which he is fully paid, was extended again through August 27th. The Milwaukee Brewers placed pitcher Freddy Peralta on the 10-day injured list with right shoulder inflammation. That is something that he began to apparently have some issues after taking a swing in his last start. Mookie Betts talked to reporters yesterday and said he's feeling really, really good and is eager to return soon to the Dodgers lineup from a stint on the injured list due to right hip inflammation. His quote to reporters, "It's the first time I felt normal in a long time. There's no pain at all. Hopefully I can stay on this path." Let's get to the good stuff. The Dodgers playing host to the Mets last night. And in the bottom of the fifth inning, Billy McKinney, former Met, extended the Dodger lead.
Chris Taylor leading from third. Fly ball, left center field. And Dominic Smith can't get it. It's going to roll to the wall. McKinney will hold at second base. A two-out pinch hit double. And the Dodgers take a 3-1 lead.
That from AM 570 LA Sports. Trey Turner also pitched in as well.
Three balls, two strikes, two outs to Trey Turner with Muncy on deck. And a ground ball to the right side. In the right field for a base hit past the diving Jeff McNeil. McKinney comes in to score. Second run of the fifth, and the Dodgers lead 4-1.
Final score there, Dodgers 4, Mets 1. Cardinals, Brewers, and Tyler O'Neill got a big hit for St. Louis.
Swinging a long fly ball in the center field. They get enough. Oh, yeah, get up, baby. Yes, sir. Cardinals lead it 5-4. A home run, a three-run home run by Tyler O'Neill, and he touches them all. Listen to this crowd. Listen.
That sound from KMOX. The Cardinals beat the Brewers 8-4. The Reds, fighting for a wild card spot in the National League, face the Marlins. And Joey Votto, who's been red hot of late, hitting for a lot of power, came through with a home run in the bottom of the fourth inning.
Delivers the 2-2. And Votto puts a charge into one deep right center field and gone. Three-run shot, Joey Votto, and the Reds are on top, 3-1.
That from 700 WLW. The Reds are now just a game behind the Padres for the second wild card. We'll be talking about that with Carl Ravitch coming up. The Angels and Tigers. This game was wild. The Tigers had a 10-2 lead, but the Angels would come back.
Here's the next delivery, and there's a ball that's hit well down the left side, and that ball is out of here. How about that? Stassi has just hit a two-run homer, and the Angels have been able to climb the mountain today in Detroit and lead it 11-10.
That from Angels Radio AM 830. The Angels win that game 13-10. Oakland, the White Sox. Oakland in second place in the American League West, but Matt Olson gave them a lead in the top of the seventh inning in this game.
The 0-1. Breaking ball again, and that is hammered deep down the line and right. Stay fair and get out, and it does. Matt Olson unloads on a hanging breaking ball, number 31, with Elvis Andrus aboard, and just like that, smiles in the dugout. It's a 5-3 Oakland lead.
That sound from A's cast. Oakland wins 5-4. The Astros in the top of the American League West face the Royals. Aledmys Diaz broke a tie in the top of the 10th inning.
Another 3-2. And Diaz lifts this one into center field. That's going to dunk in front of Taylor for a base hit. Scoring is Gurriel as everybody moves up 90 feet. Astros lead 4-3.
That was Robert Ford on KBME 790 AM. At the end of the day, after the Astros beat the Royals 6-4, Oakland, 2.5 games behind the Astros in the American League West, but they lead the Red Sox, the Mariners, the Jays for the second wild card in the American League. The Phillies have had this incredibly easy schedule of late, but you know what? They haven't been able to take advantage of it. The Diamondbacks on Thursday going for a sweep of the Phillies, and Nick Ahmed came through.
And Withers' pitch to him is a line drive. That's fair. Down the line and left extra bases. One is in. Here comes the other runner around third. Come to the plate, Ellis, and he will score. It's a two-run double, Ahmed, and a 3-0 Diamondback lead.
That from Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. The Phillies now are 4 games behind the Braves in the National League East, with the Mets 5 games behind Atlanta. Sad news for the Detroit Tigers organization. Bill Freehan, an 11-time All-Star catcher and a key member of the 1968 World Championship team, passed away on Thursday at age 79. And memorabilia company Fanatics, continuing its push into the collecting space, has cemented a deal with Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association for the exclusive licenses to produce baseball cards. Topps is out. Christina, what are you working on?
So I would say everybody go check out the First Take, Her Take podcast. Comes out every Wednesday morning. I would also say go check out the Adam Schefter podcast that gets released every Monday or Tuesday. Also our newest MMA show, DC and RC, we just kicked that off about a month ago. That comes out every Wednesday and Thursday, and stay tuned for our new NHL podcast. That's going to launch very soon.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage on Baseball Tonight.
Carl Ravage, Rabbit Train, Williamsport, Pennsylvania, the Little League World Series going on. Carl, tell me about the rhythm of your days once you get to Williamsport.
Early on, four games. We do two of them at Lomity Stadium. There's two at Volunteer Stadium. So basically 1, 3, 5, and 7 p.m. Eastern time. Myself, Kyle Peterson, Jess Mendoza, we do the 3 and the 7 o'clock games over at Lomity. Mike Monaco is here with Xavier Scruggs, Tim Kirkshen. Some combination of those guys do the 1 and 3 o'clock games. And Julie Foudy and Sebastian Salazar are reporters. It's obviously very different. There was a very sort of punch in the gut moment yesterday when I walked out onto the complex for the first time. I think you've been there before. We have our own compound, if you will, and then you walk down a huge set of concrete stairs to the actual facility. And the first time I did that yesterday, it was sort of struck just how quiet, empty it was. And it was really sad, actually, to experience that. And then once you get into the games, it returns back to the baseball. It's those boys and tonight girl that is going to be on the field playing. And that does provide a sense of sort of calm and joy, because again, what you want, and it's always about these kids, is them playing baseball and enjoying themselves and hitting homers and making unbelievable plays in the field. And it did get there, but boy, that was it was a gut punch the first time I walked into the complex.
I'm sure, and you know, you have kids, I have kids that you know, initially for them, it may also have been a little bit jarring, but then, you know, once they get in the rhythm of things, it's about the baseball. It's about enjoying each other and connecting with players on other teams and meeting players with other teams and sliding down the hill on the cardboard and all that cool stuff. I know, you know, ESPN provides great research information going into this. Teams to watch, players to watch in this thing. What are you hearing?
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually did the West Regional. And yesterday, both of the teams that came out of the regionals, and this year, Buster, for the listeners here on my podcast, this year, instead of international teams, we don't have any. And generally, the Little League field at the World Series is 16 teams, 8 United States and 8 international. The 8 international have been replaced by 8 more United States teams. So there are 2 teams from each region. I did the California region, and the 2 teams that came out of there were Hawaii and Torrance, California. Both of those teams were awfully impressive yesterday. The game that I did for the championship was Hawaii, and it was California. There was a kid named Tyler Shindo on Hawaii who was one of those Pat Vendetti guys. He pitches with both arms. He was incredible. Wow. He had a 6-finger glove. He's apparently at home in Hawaii trying out for an all-select, you know, United States team. So he didn't come. But there are a variety of other kids on his team. Hunter Gibson pitched last night for the team from California. Those two teams have been the most impressive teams. And again, I saw them in the regional, but they were awfully good yesterday. There's a kid from New Hampshire named Tristan Lucier. He's the shortstop, played great yesterday. Dave Belisle, who coached the team that came here twice from Rhode Island, watched him in the New England regionals. He's a baseball hockey player. Belisle, whose dad was one of the greatest high school hockey coaches forever in Rhode Island, and Dave was his assistant. Dave insists that this Tristan Lucier, and if you watch him, he's different. I mean, he's just different, is going to be a first-round pick of either the major leagues or the NHL. And again, he's 12, but you can see his body, you can see his movements, you can see his swing. He hit a home run halfway up the hill last night, which we haven't seen in a long time. So he's one of those guys. And later tonight, Ella Bruning. And anytime there's a girl that comes to Williamsport, and Monet Davis is going to be here for our kids cast coming up on Tuesday and then on Sunday night on ESPN2. She's gotten recognized for her catching abilities by Jorge Posada and Wilson Contreras online. They both sent Twitter sort of responses to video that MLB had put out. She's phenomenal, and she's going to be in action tonight at 7 on ESPN2. So those are just a couple of names, and these storylines, like a Major League Baseball season, after about 3 days instead of after about 3 weeks or even 2 months. After about 3 days, you start to realize, you know, who the teams are and who the players are. But like the Major League Baseball season, like some of the teams that we're watching right now, you do move past your best pitchers and you start to get into, you know, the third, fourth starters. The bullpens get a little softer and then the offense starts to click in a little bit.
Yeah, and I can't wait, you know, by the time we get to Sunday and the teams are in the rhythm of things, to see the response that we're going to, you know, see from little leaguers to Shohei Ohtani. I mean, that's going to be incredibly exciting because obviously they're going to be well aware of him and how important he is in baseball. Mike Trout, you know, will be there this weekend from everything that I've been told by the Angels people, Jose Ramirez, the Cleveland Indians. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I want to ask you as we, you know, push forward and talk about, you know, what's going on with major league teams. The Philadelphia Phillies, you know, we talk about strength of schedule going into seasons. We talk about strength of schedule at the All-Star break coming down the stretch. And the Phillies were a team that seemed to have an absolutely clear advantage in strength of schedule as of a couple weeks ago. Our great Paul Hambakides, you know, predicted a few weeks ago that the Phillies would come through this and win because they played really bad teams like the Diamondbacks. But Carl, when you play the Diamondbacks and you lose every game, that's a problem. And that's what's going on with the Phillies. And I really feel like it potentially the difference between a team like the Braves, which you know, that group has won together, and a team like the Phillies who haven't won together, that might wind up being as important as anything. What do you see about the Phillies right now after that terrible series against the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, terrible is an understatement. I don't know. I think we've all looked at the Phillies and acknowledged for some reason without really being able to put a finger on it that there's just something missing there.
Yep.
It's a real hard thing to look at. And similarly, it's not necessarily fair to do it today when the Braves are playing great, but whatever the Phillies are lacking, and this, I think you could make the statement right after the trade deadline that the Braves did things and were playing with a sort of attitude. And you just looked at the collection of talent that they had. And you said, you know, I can see that team doing really well and putting things together. And whether it was the just continued strong play of Swanson and Riley or some of the frustrations of the Phillies bullpens and some bad defensive play. And we had to move Alec Boehm over to first base and that didn't work out. There was just something about the Phillies that never allowed me, and I'm not even going to just me to kind of invest on that horse and say, it's absolutely going to be strong down the stretch. And this series against the Diamondbacks, the biggest shortfall of looking ahead to the schedule is they're all major league teams, and whether they have a lousy record, they are all capable. And currently the Diamondbacks are kind of feeling better about themselves, but it's been forever that the Phillies have lost to a team or been swept by a team. I think you got to go back 52 years. Last time they were swept in a series of three or more games by a team that entered with a winning percentage of .320 or lower. So this Wow. was an historic setback for the Phillies, and very, very disappointing. But it's clear even prior to this, you're putting money on the Braves more than you were the Phillies. And I think it's just sort of the collection of the season up to this point to say they've just been too inconsistent. You know, the Braves were hanging around when they were dead. They had nobody. They were hurt. Their starters were falling like flies, and they were hanging around and finally got over that 500 mark where the Phillies were always there. And you wondered if they're going to go underwater. And that at least currently is where they're at. They're 61-60 and 4 games back. It's very discouraging and disheartening, and you should go to Arizona and you have to win the game. Zach Wheeler starts.
You know, when I covered the Yankees from 1998 to 2001, I learned so much about, you know, how experience manifests, because there were, you know, 4 or 5 times during that run of championships and, you know, making the playoffs where it looked like the team was dead. And then they'd get into games against these younger teams and the Oakland Athletic teams of, you know, Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada, which, you know, were more dynamic and may have had more talent in that moment. But then you had older guys like Paul O'Neill, who had been through it, and Tino Martinez had been through it. And you'd get into pressure spots and it would be the Yankees who would respond, which is, you know, what I've been thinking all along is as the Braves have kind of hung in there and the Mets didn't put them away and the Phillies in the last few weeks, you know, didn't grab this division by the throat. You look at the Braves. I mean, Freddie Freeman's there. He's been in the postseason now a bunch. Dansby Swanson has been through this. Austin Riley has been through this as young as he is. A lot of these guys, and you're like, boy, oh boy. On the other hand, on the Phillies side, you know, Bryce Harper has been around a long time, but he hasn't won with this group of players. Joe Girardi obviously has a long history of winning in his career, but not with this group. And yeah. I felt like all along that that could be difference-making if the other teams allowed the Braves to be in there. And it looks like they're starting to run away with this thing.
Well, I mean, yes, Riley, Swanson, there are certain guys that are coming through. Freddie Freeman has always been a steady force. I don't know. JT Realmuto's the best catcher in baseball, goes 0 for 11 in the series and is 3 for his last 26. Now, the sort of ballast of the Braves is Freeman. And then you wait for the other pieces to join him. And now, you know, like watching an animated cartoon when quicksand hardens, some of those pieces of Atlanta are hardening around Freddie Freeman. Yeah. Some of those pieces around the Phillies guys are weakening and softening currently. Look, it could change, but the way the Braves are currently playing and given the talent level and given the infusion of the Adam Duvalls and the trades that Alex Anthopoulos made at the deadline, hard to see them taking steps back. And now that we're getting towards the middle and late August into September, that's when you ride these waves. That's when you're buoyed. That's when you're lifted because you know October's right around the corner and you find fifth gear. And to me, the Braves are in fourth gear, waiting to find fifth, and the Phillies, and to some degree, the Mets are kind of stuck in third gear. The Phillies have gone from fourth gear down to third gear, and I'm watching the Braves just kind of pull away. And there's no reason to think, given the health of some of the pitchers coming back, that they're going to go in a different direction. And all of a sudden, you look at them and like they check every box. They have the starting pitching coming back. They have a deeper offense, even without, and we haven't even mentioned Acuna yet, which shows just how good a job Alex did. And their bullpen's really good. I mean, you know, the Phillies did something in their bullpen, but even with the moves they made, there were some skeptics about Kyle Gibson being a starter and Ian Kennedy in the pen. It was one of those like, okay, yeah, maybe, but nothing about it that would say, yep, we are good to go. Kind of like what the Red Sox did, like Kyle Schwarber, good player, but are you really trying compared to what the Yankees just did or even the Rays? That's kind of where you land with the Phillies, and the Braves are in the corner of the Yankees and the Blue Jays and the Rays that all made really, really strong, legitimate pushes to get better.
Speaking of the Yankees, earlier this week, Luke Voit spoke out, which, you know, within the Yankee culture is unusual to have a player come out and basically complain about, you know, what his playing time might be. He told reporters, look, I have every right to play as much as Anthony Rizzo, who they just added. And he talked about how he led the majors in home runs last year. I love what Aaron Boone did yesterday. You know, Luke Voit didn't start the night before. Yesterday, not only was he the DH, but he was leading off. And then he had Rizzo hitting two, and then Judge, and then Gallo, and then Giancarlo Stanton played right field. That to me is a way to, you know, keep a player happy, you know, Ravi. And also at some point, I do think it's good for the Yankees to go to Stanton and say, look, you're not going to be a DH only. And we know that you have more injury risk if you play in the outfield, but we need you to play the outfield more to make this work. And it's not only going to be about right in this moment with Luke Voit, but next year and the year after that with Gary Sanchez. Like, they have to figure out a way to fit all these pieces together. And Stanton needs to play the outfield on a regular basis. What do you think?
Well, without question. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton, it's hard to assume he's too fragile. Like, I don't get that. I know there's been injuries. But at some point, you have to figure out what are you now? What are you going to be? We have all these years and all this money. And when you play the outfield, our lineup is much better. And that's got to be the priority moving forward. If you're not playing, then we are, if you're not playing in the field, then that means that we're weakening ourselves 1 through 9. We, I think, are willing to take the risk of your injury in order to have the 9 best guys in our lineup. And if you get hurt, we're still covered, because if you're the DH, we're weakened. If you're hurt, we're weakened. But we have guys that can fill in if you're hurt. You should be in the, we need you in the field. That's the bottom line. You're the player. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's the same conversation you're having with Luke Voit. We need you in the field. And by the way, we do need you to DH on certain days. So you're the player. We're the manager and or ownership. And this is what makes us better. It's a very difficult to think that somebody, and this is not a money issue. This is a, how are we better? With you in the field, we're better. So you're a baseball player. You're not a hitter. You're a baseball player. Let's go play. We are, it's the organization saying we're comfortable with you being in the field. We're better. That's what we're doing. That's kind of the end of the conversation for me. So yes, he's got to go there. Love the way Boone handled it. Understand we're in 2021, and Luke Voit speaking out is so 2021 as opposed to Yankee culture, that that's where we're at. Like, I'm not saying Yankee culture be damned, but this is a new way we communicate as people, as young people. We speak our mind, and I don't disagree with what he's saying. I'm glad he thinks that way, but you're right. You know, in 1985, 1995, that ain't happening. And here we are in 2021, and that's exactly how it happens everywhere.
And I tell you what, in the postseason, to have Luke Voit and Rizzo, Judge, Gallo, Stanton in the front 5-year lineup, that's going to be a challenge for
of
other
course.
Teams. And that'll be fun to watch. I've got about 3 minutes left with you. Let's do rapid fire on 3 topics. Reds, Padres. The Reds win last night to close the gap behind the Padres for the second wild card to just a game. This is shaping up to be the best playoff race, Carl.
It is. And I wouldn't count out the Cardinals. And we've done so many Cardinals games, and there are times where you look at them and you say, no, like, just stop. I don't even want to watch them. I've seen bullpens implode. I've seen bad play. But we talk about teams that have been there. They've been there. So, yes, the Padres have brought themselves back to this field. And unlike, Buster, I don't know if you feel this way, but unlike the Phillies, the Padres were a team that I looked at and said, you know, they do have it. There's not something missing like there was with the Phillies. And it's been kind of curious that they've come back to the Reds. Reds have played really well. But I would include the Cardinals in that conversation, at least this week.
The Orioles losing streak is becoming a thing. 15 consecutive losses in their run differential during this 15-game losing streak, Carl, minus 96. This is becoming historic.
It's not great. And now it's the Atlanta Braves, who need to keep winning and are playing well, that are going to make their last stop on a 9-game road trip. So you have a team that can't win against a team that's trying to put its foot down on the throat of both the Mets and the Phillies. I think by the time that series ends, it'll be 18. And hopefully it ends. But if not next Friday, you know, we're starting to talk about 24-25.
That's unbelievable. And last one for you. We got the word yesterday that Fanatics is taking over the baseball card business in its agreement with Major League Baseball. Tops is out. Look, I don't know about the business aspects of this, and I know that change is inherent in life, but there's something sad about seeing Tops out, because that was an important part of my childhood, your childhood.
Sure was. My favorite bubblegum of all time, and card flipping was a huge deal. Now, if we get into it, it's interesting that there are still baseball cards given NFTs and all these things. I don't know if they're going to just operate in an imaginary world where you have something that really doesn't exist, but you pay a lot of money for it. I'm not certain. But yes, I'm going to miss I'm going to miss the idea that Tops and bubble gum that they used to sell, which most people hated and I loved. I thought it was the greatest ever. And even the cards used to smell like, you know how these batters will smell the bat after they foul one off?
Yep.
When I opened the pack of cards, I would then smell the cards because they smelled like the gum and it was just great.
Now, I don't know if it's because my mom made a deal with me. She said, yes, you can get the baseball cards, but you're not allowed to chew the gum.
Yeah.
You know, the couple of times when I would sneak that, I hated the gum. Like, I thought the gum was terrible.
Oh, I loved it. But I'm also the kind of weird dude that thought Pepto-Bismol tasted well. And I like Canada mints, which most people think are like a medicine. Those little pink Canada wintergreen mints. I thought they were the greatest things ever. And the gum obviously was kind of a pink little rectangle. And I loved it. So again, my flavor, my taste, as my wife would always say, we continue to improve your food intake. You had a lot of issues growing up. We're still working on it.
Well, you're not the only weird one. I found out in conversations with my three siblings, because I just assumed they did the same thing I did, that I was the only one in the family who ate cow grain and dog food and cat food as I went through my days of working on the farm, okay? Unbelievable. All right, Ravi, I'll see you in Williamsport.
All right, see you soon.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, ToddRadom.com. Todd, as we start today, I want to ask you about news we got yesterday that Fanatics is taking over the baseball card business in its agreement with Major League Baseball. Tops is out. You know the side of the business far better than I do. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Boy, Buster, this is a seismic change. I mean, I cannot, I can't put into words how stunning this news was for just about everyone when it came across yesterday. Tops, of course, associated with baseball cards for 70 years now. And Fanatics really just kind of swooping in and taking over everything. So we'll see what it all means. We've got a little while until this comes to fruition, but certainly a stunning, stunning move. And, you know, baseball cards right now are on fire. People have been home during the pandemic, buying, selling, collecting, doing all kinds of things. Let's see what Fanatics has to offer. But I am still just absolutely floored here.
So my most vivid baseball card memories, actually, I specifically remember the first two packs that I got, which was from a store in Snellsville, Vermont. my mom stopped and I got the two packs. And I can remember specifically the first baseball card that I laid eyes on was Gary Sutherland, who was an infielder, played with the Houston Astros during the course of his career. And within that pack, Lee May was in there. That was the 1973 set. I loved that set of baseball cards. I think I, you know, as some of them moved on, I have clung to those. Tell me about a baseball card memory for you.
Well, I have a brother who is 4 years older than me, who was not necessarily a huge baseball card collector, but I inherited a few stray cards here and there from the very early 70s. But my baseball card collecting really took root in 1977 when we got two new teams, the Mariners and the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And certainly as somebody who's interested, even as a young kid, in history and knowing that this was special and being a visual kind of person from a family of artists, I love the airbrushed, like literally airbrushed bad logos on the caps of the future Blue Jays and, you know, and Mariners, Doug Ault and Diego Sigui. And that's when it really kicked in for me. And I still have them. And actually they are sitting in a box in a closet about 6 feet to my right. And I am waiting to bestow them upon a friend of mine who has a young kid. And I'm waiting for the Canadian border to open. And they're sitting there and I'm going to get in the car and put them in there and we'll make this all happen. I know the border's open, but it's complicated.
Now, you're right about those airbrushed logos. And now that you say that, I remember those specifically because those were the upside down pitchforks, right?
Yep, that's right. The very unlucky upside down pitchforks.
Right. And with the Mariners, and they were done ugly. It was almost like someone was at 4:59 on a Friday and they're ready to head off for the weekend. Oh, yeah, that's right. I got to do the Mariners logo on that Diego Sigui card. And they like freehanding it. It was pretty ugly.
Well, Buster, all I'm going to tell you is, as somebody who is old enough to have actually done actual airbrushing before Photoshop, this was not an easy thing. It was done to actual size, usually. It required a compressor and paint coming out of a little pen that you had to press down upon and get the pressure right. And so whoever was doing that, I sympathize and totally understand. And let's just probably understand that some of these people were better than others.
All right, let's get to this week's Forgotten Franchise.
All right, Buster, last week we discussed the St. Louis Browns, who now play as the Baltimore Orioles. And a couple of months ago, we talked about the great National League Orioles of the 1890s. But today, we're going to take a look at yet another Oriole club. In 1901 and 1902, a team called the Baltimore Orioles played in the American League, and their short, complicated history led to the formation of the team now known as the New York Yankees in 1903. The AL declared itself a major circuit in 1901, with eight clubs in eight cities, including Baltimore. But the long-term prosperity of the league really hinged upon having a club in New York, which the AL was lacking, and this weighs heavily in today's discussion. The newly formed Orioles made their debut on April 26, 1901, at home against Boston. This was also the first ever game for the team we now know as the Red Sox. And 10,371 fans greeted the new club, who didn't disappoint that day, winning by a score of 10-6. The Orioles were mediocre in their debut season, finishing up at 68-65, good for fifth place, and attendance lagged. Secret discussions took place early the next year about relocating the team to New York to compete against the well-established National League Giants, but a satisfactory ballpark couldn't be located, and the Orioles began their second season with a loss to Cy Young and Boston. Orioles player manager John McGraw left Baltimore under less than auspicious circumstances in late June 1902, jumping to the Giants a little more than a week later. He'd wind up managing that club for three decades. He transferred his ownership interest in the Baltimore team to the Giants as part of that deal, and the Giants wound up becoming owners of a majority of the Orioles stock. Several key Oriole players jumped ship and joined McGraw in New York, and the Baltimore franchise quickly unraveled. On July 17th, the Orioles, short of players, were forced to forfeit a game to St. Louis, and they also forfeited the franchise with the league assuming control. The rest of the season was an absolute mess. The Orioles finished up in last place, and the writing was on the wall. the league sold the Baltimore franchise to New York investors for $18,000. Then they built a new ballpark in northern Manhattan. And all these years later, that club plays a few miles north of there, now in the Bronx, as the New York Yankees. And while some have connected the Yankees to these Baltimore Orioles, the truth is that these two are really two separate clubs. Only five of the 39 Orioles from 1902 played in New York in 1903, and the Yankees don't recognize the Baltimore Orioles in their official team records. In 2014, Baseball Reference disassociated the 01-02 Orioles from the New York Yankees. But today we are shining some light on Charm City's first AL club, this week's forgotten franchise, another Baltimore Orioles.
Wow, that is really cool. And it begs the question, as you were going through that, the American League feeling like it's a significant league, right? It's a major league. How in the world would they start a major league without a team in New York, Todd? And what would you mentioned that the trying to find a suitable ballpark, but that would seem, if you're a major baseball league, that would seem to be a starting place. Okay, what franchise are we going to have in New York?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a big deal. And of course, it needs to be said, this is way before media rights were concerned. It was all about ticket sales, and the size of New York was something that they wanted. But they didn't have a place to play, and they were getting, there was no formal agreement as of yet between the AL and NL. So the Giants were flexing their muscles and forcing them to look at real estate options, which maybe were not the best, but they eventually found the right thing. And I think it worked out. $18,000 to transfer the franchise in a certain way to New York. And here we are all these years later with the New York Yankees being worth how many billions of dollars, Buster?
Wow. I think if you were to put them out in the open market, it would be probably in the range of four. What were the Dodgers was like 2.5. I think the Yankees would be even higher than that. What'd you, as a historian, what do you think of the idea of disassociating the Yankees from the 01-02 Orioles?
Well, I've read a lot about it, and John Thorne, our friend, the official historian of Major League Baseball, made, I think, a very thorough and compelling case of why this should be the case. And again, as I said, only a handful of the 02 Orioles went on to play for the Yankees. And we see this come up across different sports. You know, it's easy to say, well, this franchise moved and became this. But really, there is no the Orioles franchise was dissolved clearly, and a new franchise took its place in New York. So it seems like the right move.
All right. When you say it, then that's what it is. All right. Let's get to this week's quiz. I have a significant lead over Taylor. Let's face it. I'm closing in on clinching. But as Christina steps in here, she actually this year, Todd, has a better record than I do if you go by winning percentage.
That's right. And Christina has subbed in more than ably for Taylor. And as a matter of fact, you know, we could talk a little trash about him because he's not here. And we sometimes do that. So I kind of like Christina's chances again today. And as has been the case, and as I always say, you've got a 1 in 4 chance, 25%. So I'm going to throw this out there and let's take it and see what happens.
Let's do it.
Which of these dollar figures is the highest? Speaking of money. A, the 1995 sale of the St. Louis Cardinals to their current ownership group.
Wow.
B, the cost to build Camden Yards. C, Cal Ripken Jr.'s career earnings. Or D, the Arizona Diamondbacks' 1998 expansion fee to join MLB. Which was the most?
Wow.
The 95 sale of the Cardinals, the cost to build an entire stadium, Camden Yards, Cal Ripken's career earnings, or the Diamondbacks' fee to join MLB?
Boy, oh boy. Now, when you talk about Cal Ripken's career in earnings, you're talking about his salary as a player, correct?
That's what we're talking.
Okay. Christina, you want to go for, you want to take a shot at it?
This is tricky. I'm going to go with D.
Boy, and I feel like I'm being set up here.
You're always being set up, Buster.
I know. I'm always being set up here because my instinct is to go in one direction. And knowing, too, that, you know, in a usual relationship within the Cardinals ownership, maybe there was something, that had been worked out there. The obvious answer would be the cost of building Camden Yards. So that's what I'm going to go with.
You just overthink things all the time. Every week you overthink things. You're both incorrect. It is A, the 1995 sale of the St. Louis Cardinals to their current ownership group for $150 million. And I'll give you the rest. Camden Yards cost $110 million to build.
That's unbelievable. Okay? That is unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Wow.
I mean, compared to what we now have with billion-dollar ballparks, Cal Ripken Jr.'s career earnings to the penny, $70,730,001. Okay. And the Diamondbacks, Christina, cost a cool $130 million to bring to MLB. And as we look to the possibility of expansion, and we just talked about franchise fees, speculating Dodgers, Yankees, Buster, if your adopted home of Nashville at times gets a franchise, what would that cost?
And this is purely a guess based on what we saw the Marlins paid for. And I know that there are people within that organization who feel like that they probably paid a little bit too much for that. I'm guessing it's going to be about $1.2 billion. Does that make sense?
I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, revenues are temporarily down because of the pandemic and they're catching up from last season. But that makes sense to me. So now think about this. The Diamondbacks and the, at the time, Devil Rays came into MLB in 1998. That is the last expansion. The one prior to that was the airbrushed Mariners and Blue Jays back in 77, by the way. Or no, excuse me. It was
the Rockies
and the Marlins. Yeah. That. And so anyway, $130 million vis-a-vis this multi-billion dollar figure, inflation has set in.
That's unbelievable. Those are some great numbers. What a great question that was. And you're right. I always overthink this. Thanks, Todd.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bob Costas, sports broadcasting legend, was on with Mike Greenberg on Greeny, and he talked about the season that Shohei Ohtani is having.
You could say that Ted Williams hitting 406, or some of the seasons that Ruth had, or Triple Crown seasons that Mantle had in the 50s, or Barry Bonds with or without steroids at his peak. You could say that some of those seasons were greater seasons. There have been greater pitching seasons than this, greater hitting seasons than this. But this is unique in that nobody has ever done these things simultaneously to anything like this level in the same season. So I don't know if it's the best season ever, but it stands alone for its uniqueness, obviously.
Costas also talked about how baseball needs to make changes.
I think pace of play is very, very important, and everybody recognizes that. To have Theo Epstein now in the commissioner's office, in effect, trying to figure out ways to rein in the monster he in part helped create. And that's not a criticism. He was brilliant. He belongs in the Hall of Fame if he never does another thing in baseball. But some of these approaches, some of these analytic approaches may be good for gaining the competitive edge, but they're bad for baseball as an entertainment product. And I think that, first and foremost, if you're talking about the business of baseball, that's the most important thing. In the past, baseball has made some changes and then scoffed at anyone who had an objection by saying, oh, you're a get off my lawn guy. You're a traditionalist. You want everybody to come to the ballpark on a streetcar wearing a straw hat and ladies get in for a quarter on Ladies Day. So that you couldn't even have an intelligent conversation. The question isn't whether the game should change. It has changed over time and it should change thoughtfully going forward. The question is how.
Bleacher Tweets. The last Bleacher Tweets for this week, Don Irvine asked, given the fact that the Nationals won't be competitive for a few years, what is the likelihood that Max Scherzer would resign with them in the offseason? I can't see him going back there. Now, look, I know Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals, well enough to know that he's not going to be someone who's going to be tanking for, you know, the next 3 or 4 years. However, if you're Max Scherzer and you're nearing the end of your career, do you want to go to a team that's rebuilding? I don't think so. I would not be surprised if he signs with another team. And I think everyone is wondering at some point, you know, would Max play for the Cardinals, the team that he rooted for when he was growing up? DeRock 835 has this. Is there a reason that Stanton, Judge, and Gallo being the three outfielders with Voit DHing and Rizzo playing first base being the daily lineup for the Yanks isn't being considered? Is it due to Stanton's injury history or something else? Yeah, Carl and I talked about that. I think there's been a general reluctance within the Yankees organization to play Stanton in the outfield. But given the makeup of their roster, that does seem to be the best potential lineup for them. So I would expect that Stanton's going to be continue to be playing more in the outfield. Cab 365-19833 asks, hey, Buster, you mentioned the podcast Thursday that Freddie Freeman and Fernando Tatis Jr. are big MVP candidates. What does each player have to do to be the MVP? I think Fernando Tatis Jr. right now is in the lead. If he's productive down the stretch, regardless of whether or not the Padres make the playoffs, I think he's going to win. I think the way that Freddie Freeman would overcome that would be if Tatis Jr. gets hurt again, or if he slumps down the stretch and Freeman continues to roll. We talked yesterday about how he's had the highest batting average in Major League Baseball since May 7th. And if the Braves wind up running away with the National League East, then I think he's going to be given a lot of credit for that. PK Steinberg writes, baseball loves its curses, the Cubs, the Red Sox, but are the Phillies, the team with the most losses in baseball history, actually the most cursed team? I'm not buying that, PK, because I'm looking at that team in Cleveland. The Indians have not won the World Series since 1948. Of course, next year they'll be called the Guardians, which we'll have to assume this curse. And keep in mind, you know, the Indians, not only have they not won the World Series, but in 2016, they had a 3-1 lead over the Cubs in that World Series, and they played into extra innings after coming back in Game 7. That's pretty heart-wrenching. I don't know if you can the Phillies can overcome that. Remember, the Phillies won a World Series in 2008. So, PK, I would put it on the baseball franchise in Cleveland. Keep sending in those Bleacher tweets over the weekend. I'm off to Williamsport. Remember, on Sunday Night Baseball, we have Indians and Angels, Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout and Jose Ramirez hanging out with Little Leaguers. It should be an absolute blast. My thanks today to Christina, to Carl, to Todd. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.